Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we're back talking Dublin Bay South. Martin, you never thought of running, no?
Yeah, I have actually, Tony. And Dublin Bay South would suit me, I think. I am that kind of person. I'd fit in quite well with the landlord class. You know, I think Dublin Bay South would suit me.
I beg to differ. Just because you're from landed gentry doesn't
mean I speak their language, Tony.
Yeah. No, but it's far you've fallen. I can't wait for the day you do run in Ashbourne and everybody says that it'll just have one billboard up saying Martin McMahon, the guy who annoyed you on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly.
Give me your number one. Anyway, we are delighted to be joined on Zoom by the Social Democrats candidate, Sarah Durkin, in the Dublin Bay South by-election. Sarah, thanks for taking time to talk to us.
No problem. Delighted to be here, Tony and Martin. Great to talk to you.
It has been, the actual Dublin Bay South whole culture of it has been, everybody's been looking in as from afar. There's been people talking about it as a referendum on the government. There's been all sorts of people throwing their hats in the ring. Why did you put yourself forward, Sarah? Because it's a big field you're going into.
Yeah, look, but I'm a social democrat, and I believe we need social democracy as the political future in Ireland, as the only sensible, practical, caring alternative to what we have now. So for me, entering politics is all about the long-term solutions, not the short-term fixes that we're seeing that aren't fixes. They're only causing problems down the road from our current government. I very much see the Social Democrats as the party of our granddaughters, not the party of our grandfathers. So, you know, politics can be quite entertaining, but actually it's really serious what we're dealing with in the country at the moment, post-pandemic, and still with many of the issues pre-pandemic cropping up again: housing, homelessness, childcare, our economy, you know, mental health. And particularly, like I've lived in Dublin City Centre for the last 27 years, and it's been pretty grim throughout the pandemic, and seeing the kind of falling apart of the city centre, of businesses, and particularly culture and the arts, which is my background. So, you know, it was an easy decision in some ways to go back into this election after the general election in 2020. And we've had a huge surge in membership in the Soc Dems since the election of our six TDs in the Dáil. And I think people are really increasingly recognising that the Social Democrats are the sensible alternative and the future of politics.
What differs in Dublin Bay South compared to other constituencies?
I'm from Mayo, but it's been a very long time. I was a kid the last time I was involved in any kind of Mayo politics. So you could probably answer that better than I can. Like, I'm so local at the moment that I'm steeped in it. But I think Dublin Bay South is very much a national constituency, that it's the issues of the entire country you can see reflected here in Dublin Bay South. You know, it is a very wealthy constituency in some ways, but also there's a lot of social deprivation, homelessness on the streets as well. So it has everything in it in quite a small area.
Just you touched on housing. So There's a high proportion of people in Dublin Bay South who are homeowners, and yet there's also a high percentage of people who are in rental accommodation. There's two different conversations in many ways. How are you finding that conversation on the doors, or is there a theme linking the two now?
Do you know what? People think that people who own houses or landlords don't necessarily care about the general housing situation, and that it's like, I'm all right, you know, affect the rest of you doesn't work so much. But what I'm finding is people really care about the housing crisis and the homelessness crisis and the rental crisis. Because if you're in your 50s, 60s, 70s and you have kids at home, you know they will not be able to afford a place even to rent in Dublin Bay South. And I think that's become particularly sharp after the pandemic with the 2 kilometre and the 5 kilometre. If you can't live near to the people that you love and you're related to and want to have connections with, it's really problematic. And people don't want their kids or their grandkids living 20, 50, like 100 kilometres away from them. So we've had this fragmentation of communities. And I think it has suited the current government that renters don't necessarily get registered. So we've been doing a big renters get registered drive as well. And I think there is probably a bigger conversation to be had about voting and registration in the country, but that's a conversation for another day. You know, the rent is connected to ownership as well. I don't think it's an either or model. You have many people who want to own a house and they're paying multiple times the rent that they would be paying in a mortgage. So there is a supply problem, and the current government are all about just making sure they're trying to make sure that the market can solve it, and the market is going, lads, we can't sort it, you know. So our solution in the Social Democrats is multifold right across the rental, from rental control, rent freezes, making sure there's a proper rental charter there for renters. And the key thing is building public housing on public land, entirely public housing on public land. We want to see a third affordable to rent, a third affordable to buy, and a third social housing. That needs to be the game changer. And this government seems completely ideologically opposed to it. Like, the mind boggles, because there are so many sensible solutions there from Europe, around the world, co-housing as opposed to co-living, land trusts, you know, approved housing bodies that are non-profit. All of this type of thing, but particularly the government just getting involved through local authorities and getting back to building houses the way we did in the 30s and 40s. It's the cheapest way in the future. And I think we need to double the investment. I think there's 3 billion at the moment. A billion of that is going on housing, HAP. So if you double the other 2 billion, that's what we need to be doing for the next few years, to seriously invest in building houses that are sustainable, that are linked to transport, linked to education, linked to cultural and sports facilities as well, because we want sustainable communities. And that's what I'm hearing on the doorsteps. People care about their neighbours. They do not want to see kids growing up in hotels. They do not want to see homeless people on the street, because it affects all of our dignity.
Just going to stop the podcast there. And this is it. We're looking for more patrons. So this is the money shout. Now, if you're getting, if you're already a patron, you're getting this podcast without an advert, which is great. Patrons don't like the adverts. And that's one of the big advantages. The other advantages, Tony, is the range of podcasts at the moment. It's massive.
Yeah. So I think it was 16 podcasts last week from everything across the network, on all in one feed. So you don't need various feeds. You don't need to subscribe to all the different podcasts. You get it in one feed. You get your notifications as they go out. And I mean that, as they go out. Martin, I think if you said just what went out on the Tortoise Shack, you know, there's probably the guts of maybe 10 episodes, but the 16 went out to patrons. So that's a lot of exclusive content as well. And we don't mean to make it just exclusive. It's just that it just so happens that these things come out and they're timely. So we get them out into the time to the patrons as they are. But you're right. We actually only ask because we need you. We need the support. And a platform like this is still no ads, still sponsor free, but it needs people to put their hands in their pockets. And, you know, we know thousands of you are listening. So it's a price for a cup of coffee, a fancy cup of coffee to you, but it really makes all the difference to us. And it's just patreon.com/tortoiseshack. Just have a look. That's all I'm asking you to do. Go and have a look. We don't even remember, we used to have to ask people to leave reviews to your podcast. We don't do that anymore. We ask you to try and go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and see if there's something there that you think you're happy to support us at.
We're going to let you go back to your podcast now. Thanks for listening.
Because we want sustainable communities, and that's what I'm hearing on the doorsteps. People care about their neighbours. They do not want to see kids growing up in hotels. They do not want to see homeless people on the street, because it affects all of our dignity.
Can I just ask, Sarah, this is the first time, I think, in over a year that people have had a stranger call to their door. How is that experience? How are you finding people? Are people well? Are they upset? There is no gauge out there at the moment, except yourselves that are doing the canvassing.
Yeah, it's quite daunting. Like, I've been living by myself for the last year. So for me, it's also daunting going out there and having conversations. But then you realize, actually, we're getting the same amount of doors open. People are always, I find it extraordinary how honest and open and vulnerable people are when they have these conversations, because they recognize that politics does matter and it does have an impact on their lives, and they do want to tell you things. And sometimes they tell me very intimate and personal things about their living circumstances, about their mental health, about their kids, about their, you know, their grannies. So yeah, it's a big concern of like what happens when you kind of lift the lid after that. And of course, we know during the pandemic, there's been an increase in violence in the home and those sort of things. So most people I've been talking to seem to be okay, but there is an added vulnerability there. Like, I'm hearing a lot about mental health and suicide issues as well, that people aren't getting the help that they need, whether it's in housing situations. And I know even pre-pandemic from talking to families who were living multi-generations in a house, and that suits some people, but it doesn't in cramped conditions when you've the grandkids and the grandparents, not in the housing stock that we currently have. So, you know, we always talk with our canvassers and say to be, you know, to be careful and be cognizant of what's going on. Like, my background is in theatre. So every conversation you have on the door, like, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what's going on for those people behind the door. So it takes a lot of patience and compassion and empathy to put yourself into those conversations. But like, people are incredibly positive overall. They want something different. They want solutions to the problems that we have. There's the odd bit of voter apathy, of course, as well, where people don't feel that their voice matters. And to those people, I say, like, your voice and your vote really does matter, and it can make a difference.
I'm conscious of... It is true. There's the mental health impacts of the pandemic. Also, we always say, you know, good healthcare, good housing policy is good health policy. It's also good environmental policy. You know, all of those. This should be, when you use the word sustainable, it should be built into the policies of all, whether it's education, health, or housing. In terms of the, like, I mean, we had Harry on Sunday from Irish election projections, and you know, he says that basically all the everything points to it being a Fine Gael seat to lose. Do you feel that is actually not the case? Do you feel that the seat is up for grabs, because there does seem to be an opportunity in a by-election to have that kind of, I'm going to use a protest vote as well, can be used, where people don't feel like they're not going to bring down the government by voting against them in this situation, but they may actually make their voice heard more than they would at a general election.
Yeah, look, this is a strong Fine Gael constituency. I don't think anyone disputes that. Nonetheless, I think this is a very changeable constituency as well. It's never elected the same four TDs. It is a bellwether for the country. And I think it is completely open. That's what we're hearing. And you don't often hear that in the press or in the usual political commentary. But you hear that shift on the door. If you're listening carefully, you will hear it. People don't necessarily want Fine Gael. They don't necessarily want Sinn Féin either. And it's been, you know, billed as a battle between the two of them. I think it's way more open than people think. People are very considerate about their vote. That's what I'm hearing. Lots of people haven't made up their minds yet as well. And I know our canvassers and myself are converting votes into number ones. So look, there's a lot of candidates in it, a lot of high profile people. Realistically, it is a battle, but it's certainly one worth having. And I think when you see people now recognise that the Social Democrats are certainly punching way above our weight with our six TDs in the Dáil and have delivered change and have even years ago brought up issues like childcare, extended free parental leave, that people are coming around to, like, oh yeah, you know, we've really made use of that in the pandemic. So I'm pretty confident we will do really, really well in this by-election.
Can I ask you, on childcare, Dublin Bay South, does it, Dublin Bay South have a massive issue with childcare compared to other constituencies?
Huge, huge. Look at the rents in this place. You can't even get childcare places under the age of two in Dublin Bay South at the moment. They're non-existent. And we have lots of parents in our branch, and we're hearing from the people that we're talking to. One, it's unaffordable completely. Like, you're paying a mortgage, you're going to pay 2,000 or so a month if you've more than one or two kids. It's massive issue in the area. And that is connected to giving parents choice, whether it's they want to be in formal childcare situations or have more extended paid and unpaid parental leave, which we would certainly support. Like, we championed that in the Dáil in 2019. We want to see significant improvements under the National Childcare Scheme as well, introduce a new early years payment to cover children right for the first year of their life. And as I said, introduce more paid and unpaid parental leave. And then there are issues in terms of pay and equity and the kind of gender divide and how we think about all aspects of care in society as well. And that's become way more marked in this pandemic. There's been a huge disappearance of women, and particularly women who are mothers, who have to make very difficult choices. And as a society, we can't afford that. Like, we can't afford to have highly educated workers when they don't have the choice to be home to mind their kids. So reducing the costs is really important. Increasing the number of places is really, really, really important. And giving parents the choice of childcare provision that they want to use for themselves as they see fit.
Sarah, you mentioned twice now that about your background in theatre, and you spoke about, you know, the need for recovery, and also there has to be a recovery in the arts. You might let me know, just let listeners know, what does that look like? Because I know they're talking about trialing the basic income now for in the arts. Without being bad, that's really welcome, and you know, it'd be nice to see that rolled out and working. But without creative spaces, you can't do very much, and it's very hard to get creative space in Dublin based out without paying huge astronomical rents. How do we tackle these things?
Like, I've worked in the arts for over 20 years, and I live 5 minutes from Temple Bar, which was designated our cultural quarter. But I've seen a complete bleeding out of both artists and artist spaces over that time. And, you know, Dublin City Council Culture Company does amazing work with artists as well. But we need to look at rates in the area. We need to look at insurance for art spaces as well as the general cost of living for artists, because they just can't afford to live in Dublin Bay South. I'm sure you're aware of Mark O'Halloran's article not too long ago in the Journal. Where
we had him on.
Yeah, you had him on.
Two weeks before he did the article, he came on and said he was lucky to be able to pay his rent at $2,000 a month.
But he's paying multiples of what I'm paying in a mortgage to live around here. That is not sustainable for anybody. And like, I'm well aware as a financial manager in the arts of what the rates that people are being paid. And it is very precarious, temporary work. And if you lose the heart of your city, like, I mean, Temple Bar was put there in the first place because we recognized at a time that cultural regeneration is the way that you regenerate cities. And it's heartbreaking seeing all of the cultural spaces and indeed small businesses done. So we need to return to that and use that sensibly to ensure that Dublin City becomes a place where we value more culture, we value more arts. And those are the places, from a psychological point of view, and with my art science background as well, with Science Gallery, we now recognise that the behavioural science is there to show it, that how important the arts are for our mental health, for our ability to process the trauma that we've been through as well. And that we do have a need to gather. Of course, that needs to be safely done post-COVID and so on. But as human beings, we have something built into our DNA that ensures that we need to gather. And the arts, dance, theatre, music, art, visual arts are all incredibly important to us. And are a huge part of our economy as well. We need to be a creative economy. And we're talking about skills for the 21st century with our young people. Like, that's collaboration, that's creativity, that's empathy. They are the things that art help us build, especially for young people. And like the way that this pandemic has affected young people, like 15 to 25, like they have the highest unemployment rate. They're in the most precarious jobs at the moment. So I would like us to see really significantly investing in the arts, in artists, as well as supporting that by bringing down the cost of living generally across society. So it makes an arts career viable, and also living in the arts, living in Dublin, being part of your community, hanging out around and you know, having fun too. Like, you know, this kind of economic policy that's based on this sort of Ayn Rand, neoliberalism, everything, everyone for themselves, it's just wrong. It's both morally wrong and it's completely stupid because it doesn't work. You have to have a society first before an economy. You have to have culture first before an economy. And I hear the splits on the street. Like, I hear the homophobia, I hear the racism, I hear, you know, the populism rising. And if we don't have a proper centrist politics that supports the dignity of people's lives, and in that I include culture as a right to participate in culture, we will never get anything fixed. So we, as I say, you need sensible policies that recognize the dignity of people's lives first. And then you have the creative basis for building a strong economy.
Last question from me, Sarah. It's feasible that you could be back on the doors mid-September, early October, doing the exact same thing you're doing now. Even if you don't do well, do you see this as good experience or a dry run or something like that?
Look, as I say, I joined the Social Democrats because I see they are the party of the future, and recognizing that small parties are often written off. But you know what? All parties start as small parties. And I'm listening to a very different voice. I'm listening to the kids on the street, or the 10 and 12 year olds who are coming running up to me, you know, who see me on post and say, "Are you Sarah Durkin? You're the Social Democrats. Can I talk to you about policy?" I was like, "Yes, you can talk to me about policy." So, you know, those conversations are very different to the kind of older age groups who are still looking at the past. So I know politics is a long road. It is a very competitive constituency, but you know, we're a very tenacious bunch, and I'm personally very tenacious. So, you know, just keep going is the thing.
I just one thing I'll finish on then is you've said about the inability and the ideological opposition of the current government to make the changes. But you've used the word sensible, I think, three or four times in the course of the conversation. I would put it to you that some of the things that we're talking about need to be more radical than sensible, Sarah. Maybe they shouldn't be radical. Maybe that's the point. But
I'd say being radical is sensible. Frankly, like, we need to be bold and ambitious as a country, as in our politics. Like, we need to invest in big things like the metro in the city. Like, we need to be thinking long term. And in terms of like housing investment as well, it shouldn't be radical. It should be absolutely sensible that you build public housing on public land, but it's not. And, you know, in my work with Science Gallery, we talk about being radical a lot. We talk about empathy, and also we talk about humility, which is something we don't hear half enough of in politics, and being able to admit when we make mistakes and adjust. So like, I'm somebody like who listens, who learns and takes action. And I think that would be the same for my colleagues in the Social Democrats as well.
I'm reminded of our friend in Portugal, Tony, about humility and a humble government.
When the Partido Socialista made the mistake of reopening, they rushed to the people and they said, "We're sorry, we got this wrong." And at the meantime, our tarnished was asked about how he had commented on Dr. Tony Hoolan, and he said, "Neither of us are in the business of apologizing." And I just thought it was within 3 or 4 days of one another, we got those two statements, and it always stands out for me. There is a lack of humility in a lot of the things that carry on. Sarah,
I don't think it's helpful in our politics in general that on any side that we can't admit that we make mistakes. It's really important, and we do need to have that humility, but we also need to allow people to make mistakes and admit them, and then fix them.
Sarah Durkin, the best of luck in the Dublin Bay South election, and best of luck in the future. And I hope actually it'd be nice to actually have a conversation after this about the arts and about where the creative spaces are coming from as well, because I'm interested in returning to that. We keep talking we talk to Noel Brown all the time, and every time we go, Noel, what are you working on? And then we all like, yeah, let's end up talking about mother and baby home reports again. It'd be lovely to get back and talk about some of this.
Well, have myself and Noel on, and we'll happily talk to you about the arts.
Oh, please look. Once this election is out of under us, I think we'll go do that then. But best of luck, and you know, it's going to be an interesting, if nothing else, it's going to give everybody an insight into where the public's mind is on this. And we do wish you all the best. Thanks for your time, folks. We'll be back tomorrow. Martin, you've got Mick Clifford.
Yeah, Mick Clifford, and something that's flown under the radar, but there's been a huge sea change in the bogus self-employment thing, and the report was slipped out last Friday, but Mick and I will be putting it to rights with Tony tomorrow evening, so that's going to be huge. A lot of people don't know about this.
Yeah, okay, so we'll be back in your feed shortly, and I think Rory has a reboot coming as well later on this afternoon, so we'll be getting the emails. Talk to you all soon, folks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.